All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. I guess if you've been here before, you might have seen this presentation. This is going to be about Microsoft Network Monitor. And this is our tool we have for collecting data, traffic from the network. And first of all, let's start out with who am I. So my name is Paul Long. I'm the technical evangelist for Network Monitor. And actually, for now, our Windows Interoperability Tools Group. We work on other tools now, like the test suites, like you heard about yesterday. I write a blog, TechNet, called NetMon. So there's information about using the product, troubleshooting general problems there. And then the second link is our Connect link, where we do our betas. We have some support forums, but we actually have them on TechNet now. So it's basically for beta now. Previous to this job, I worked in CPR, which is our critical problem resolution team, where we did basically network troubleshooting, or I did network troubleshooting, corporate level support, and I work out of Charlotte. So if you ever try to get me late in the day, I might not be there, but very early in the day on the West Coast, anyways, I'm around on the forums, lurking around. And a personal note: I built a recording studio in my garage. I'm into recording, and spent a year building this thing. And actually, just last week, I've been rewiring this thing, and it's a bear to rewire. But in any case, it's a hobby of mine. And if anyone's interested in talking music or recording, I'd love to do that too. So before I even get started, how many people use a protocol analyzer when they're, or have used it or use it in their daily jobs? Okay. How many people use Wireshark? Okay. And how many people use Network Monitor? Okay. So mostly Wireshark users. Hopefully, I'm not going to try to convert you, but at least show you what you can do with Network Monitor, because there might be instances when you can use that tool get information, especially when it comes to parsing. So some key takeaways are, is at least you want to know how to capture, filter, how to use the tool like you use Wireshark. It's basically pretty much the same. I mean, there's not that much difference when it comes to a protocol analyzer, but there's obviously different ways to do it in Network Monitor. So we'll kind of go over that. Also wanted to point out is you can find interoperability issues without reading the docs with Network Monitor. Our parsers are based on the documentation. That's what we did. We basically rewrote all the parsers based on the documentation as a check against, you know, whether the documentation is accurate or not. If we could write parsers from them, then, you know, perhaps the documentation has enough information to implement the protocol. So we actually have a way in the tool, and I'll show you this later, where you can look for errors in a trace with a filter. And if you see this type of error, it's basically a parsing error, then that means it's something probably that doesn't match the documentation. So this is a pretty easy and powerful way to tell, you know, if your implementation has some differences based on the protocol, the wire traffic. And then finally, the last major key takeaway is how to document issues and annotate capture. So these are two kind of helpful features for if you have a problem and you want to send it to Microsoft rather than sending like screenshots. There's an easy way to grab the information out of the tool itself and send that data as text. And there's also a way to annotate capture, so you can say, you know, frame 15, you know, has this information. So just keep these things in the back of your head if we're going through the talk. So let's do a quick background. So way back in 92, Windows for Workgroups was released, and that was Microsoft's first foray into networking products. And so at that point, we needed some tool to be able to troubleshoot this traffic, and that's when Network Monitor 1.0 was released. And then a couple of years later, we came out, or a year later, 2.0 came out. And then you see this long distance in the middle of nothingness. And I call it the dark ages of parsing, because there wasn't really any updates to the parsers. Nothing got, you know, they became stale and old, so you had an old SMB parser that wasn't kept up to date. And this is one of the problems we wanted to resolve with Network Monitor, as you'll see in a second. And then finally, we came along in 2006. The documentation efforts came out, and this is when we kind of got in the mix and was able to create these parsers for all the new documentation came out. And then about every 9 months to a year, we've come out with a new version. And most recently, we've released our beta, our 3.4 beta. So we're going to talk about what new things are in the product since 3.3. So if you have seen this presentation before, there will be some new things. So when we decided to come out with the new version, we had a new vision, a new team, a new design. So if you ever use the old version, it's changed considerably. And over the years, we've added new features and new things to make it easier to use the product. So we had some goals when we started, and we wanted to make it easy to capture. We might be filtering, powerful, quick, easy to do. The whole product needed to be easy. We didn't, you know, there's lots of overhead to learning tools, and we didn't really want, you know, we wanted to be able to at least capture and filter the main things that you do with a product very simply. Safer. We decided that our parser model, we didn't want to use DLLs. DLLs are inherently unsafe, especially because people run this product on servers. You know, you want it to get a capture on a server. You don't want your parsers to be DLLs where someone can hack in there and whatever, cause problems. So our parsers are scripts that are included with the product. You can edit them, you can change them, but they're sandboxed in this script scripting language so that they're safe, so that you don't have any problems with DLLs, someone hacking a DLL. Performance, we constantly work on performance, but obviously you want to be able to capture at high rates and parse huge traces quickly. And automatable, this is another thing where we wanted to give you tools so you could automate captures, because often you don't have a specific, you're not going to like reproduce something and get a trace. Sometimes you want it to start a trace at a certain time or stop a trace at a certain time. So we wanted to take that into consideration as well. Then accuracy, I put this last, it's probably one of the more important things. We wanted our parsers to be accurate. So as I told you before, the old model was that somebody writes some C code, they put a DLL, and then hopefully somebody would come along and update, you know, keep it up to date. That didn't happen. There wasn't any force behind this problem. So we now update our parsers monthly. We put them out on CodePlex monthly. When documents change, we schedule changes in the parsers and update them as well. So they're keep in step so that we don't get out of sync. And this is very important because documents do change, TDIs, there's, you know, bugs found, people find problems. So we update our parsers basically as often as we can and update them on CodePlex so you guys can download them monthly when you need a new version. All right, so let's start with the first page you see when you open the UI, and this is the start page, of course. If you double-click on a capture, you'll probably never see this page, so you know, if you're the kind of person that works that way, you might want to take a peek at the start page, just because it tells you what's new, kind of keeps information over here, has some useful links, access to our forums, etc. It also has our recent captures on the left side, so this is really useful if you need to get to a capture you've looked at recently. And then finally, it has a way to select your networks before you go into a new capture. Now, you can change this later, but this is just a convenience factor. If you want to select the networks you normally use, you can keep them on the start page, get them all set up, and the next time you run Network Monitor, it'll remember those things. All right, so this is easy. I'm not going to go into too much detail unless people have questions, but it's easy because we wanted to make it easy. So all you do to get a capture in the UI is you select your network interfaces. Again, you can do this later, but from the start page, you click Create a New Capture tab, and then you hit the Start icon, and you start capturing. And you see the data come in live. There's a button there to auto-scroll to see the latest data if you want to now in the later versions. And I'll show you this real quick. But and then you can select any frame details to see the raw data. So this is pretty quick, pretty simple. Anybody have any questions on how to do this? Hopefully there's not a big issue figuring out how to get a capture, but it's pretty straightforward. And then once you do this, this is the capture tab, just to show you real quick. And the capture tab looks the same basically as when you open a capture, so they're pretty much identical. And so I just wanted to point out the main sections in this window. So you have the frame summary. Frame summary are where all the frames show up, one, two, three, four, shows the summary of the frames. This is editable. You can change the columns that show up there. This is all customizable. Once you select a frame in the frame summary, the frame details gets populated. So this is the information when you want to dig into the frame details to see what's going on. You want to see a specific field, a TCP port, an HTTP URI. That's where you'd find this information. And then when you click on an element in frame details, when you click on the frame, the hex details also gets populated at the same time. But when you click on an element in the frame's details, it actually highlights where it is in the hex detail. So you can go look at that data raw if you think there's some parsing problem or something going wrong. You can also, which is interesting, you can double-click in the hex details. So say you see some text here, and you say, I want to know where that goes. You can double-click in the hex details, and it'll basically bring up in the frame details where that data is. So it's a useful way to go backwards if you kind of just see some random data you want to see where what it's associated with. At the top, we have the display filter, and I just realized that I have not updated this slide since the new version, but the display filter is still in the same place in the new version. There's some subtle differences, which I'll show you in a second. But basically, the display filter is where you type in filters to filter out frames. So if you want to get a subset of the frames, if you want to look for HTTP data, for instance, you type a display filter, you apply it, and now your frame summary would be updated with just the frames that meet that filter. And then finally, one of the unique features of network monitors are network conversations. And so this window appears at the left side by default. And it contains a tree of something we call conversations. I'm going to go into more details about this later. But it's basically a very powerful tool to collate the information in a trace and allow you to access that data really quickly by clicking in a conversation tree. Excuse me. So 3.4 is our latest version. It's in beta, and you can get to it on our Connect site, which is a link that I showed you before, and it's also in the last slide, which you guys will get the slides as I understand it. We basically, this is some of the high-level UI items that we've changed in 3.4. And I'll go into more details about this in a second when I show you the UI. But profile management is basically a way to quickly select parser sets, and that helps performance. Well, as I said, I'll show you that in a little bit more detail. Windows layouts. You can now pick between three different layouts. If you don't like the default one, there's two others, and you can modify them. You can customize them how you like them to appear, and now you can switch between different ones. So if you want more screen width than what we give you by default, you can select a different window layout, or you can make your own and save it as one of the three layouts that you get. Color rules update. We've had color rules in the past. We made them a little bit easier to find. We've also added a way that you can save sets of colors so that you could create color rules, save it, pass it to somebody else so they can look at those same color rules. And you can append color rule sets, as I'll show you in a second. Column management, again, this is all in the same kind of vein as the last two items, in that you can set up columns and you can have a default set of columns that you use and save those. And we include a couple by default, as you'll see later. Fixed font, this is just a way to get a fixed font in the frame details. Right now it's a proportional space font. So fixed font sometimes is easier to see when you're looking at data and trying to line it up for like TCP, for instance. And then the final UI item we've updated is Live Expert. So this is the ability to run an expert on a live trace. Previously, you had to save the trace, open it back up again, and then run the expert. And so we had a lot of users saying, hey, I thought you added experts, but they weren't there because they didn't realize they had to do this. So now we basically just save the trace before we run the expert. It's kind of an intermediate step, but it allows you to at least see the menu item and run your experts on a live trace without having to save it first. So before I get to the screen, let me just show you a demo of some of these things. So let's actually go to the start page. And so this is the new capture button that I was talking about. And so one of the differences, so one of the things we wanted to do here was we had some complaints that we kind of used up a lot of vertical real estate. And so we couldn't do a lot of changing here. But what we did do is we used to have these tabs underneath for capture filter, select networks, and aliases. So we decided that those features weren't things that people use all the time, but they're still available. So by getting rid of those tabs, we give you at least a little bit more space up here. Now what we did do is we moved the capture settings is now a button up here. And this will stay on top. If you have two monitors, you can move it off the side. But basically, you can specify your capture filter there. So this is your capture filter, not your display filter. Everyone understand the difference between a display and a capture filter, I'm pretty sure. If not, raise your hand. So we move that to a different dialog box, as well as the select networks. So now this is just in a separate dialogue. You can have it off to the side. You can close it when you're not using it. But it kind of saves us some real estate. And then the other thing we did is we've had these buttons before, but a lot of them were kind of cryptic. People didn't understand that, for instance, that this was load filter. So we've now added some text to make this a little bit more obvious. We don't have so many buttons that we need a ton of space. So we've added the words for almost all our buttons so people know what they are. And then we moved some of the more important features that were hidden away in menus as buttons as well. So for instance, color rules, aliases, and columns. These are now buttons that you can see rather than people never using the thing. So we thought it was kind of important to get them out front, and they don't want to take any more real estate, so it seemed to kind of make sense for us. And I'll talk about more about the aliases later, but columns is one of the new features I talked about real quick. And so now these are the columns you have available to you, and you can customize these as well. So what this means is that by default you have frame number, time, you have these various columns that appear when you take a trace. So if I start a trace, and I assume I'll get some wireless traffic show up, this data is populated. But you can change these. You can customize by going to choose columns, and you can select which columns you want to exist. And these columns are dependent upon the way the parsers are written. So if you see a column that's not there and you want to add something, you could actually modify the parsers if you really wanted to do that. But by default, we show you a list of many, many different properties that are available to you. For the most part, if you're looking for a specific one, it begins with the protocol that describes it. So for instance, TCP will show all the TCP properties. So you could add those as other columns in your frame summary. But the column layout allows you to switch between some quickly. So the top four are special ones that we select for you based on the capture file type. So for instance, if you open an older 3.3 trace, we have a different column layout. If you open a PCAP trace, for instance, there's no process information stored in a PCAP file. So why show the column for it? So we kind of get rid of some of the columns that don't even make sense for a PCAP trace. We also open ETW traces, which is a feature that I'll talk about again, I think, later in this presentation. But basically, there's different columns that show up for that. And then finally, we add two more columns. And by the way, these are all customizable. You can make them whatever you want them to be. You can't change their name, but you can save any column layout you want for any of these six columns settings that you have. So the two we kind of threw in there is a TCP troubleshooter and an HTTP troubleshooter. So what this does is just gives you some different columns for troubleshooting TCP type problems that, you know, pretty standard, like the window size, the flags, the ACK number. And we now do the short ACK rather than the long number, so that, you know, Wireshark does this too, but to kind of give you a number that you can deal with a little bit. It's not the big, long TCP sequence number that you normally get. But you could look at that if you wanted to by changing the columns. And then we did a similar thing for HTTP. So if you're troubleshooting an HTTP trace, and I don't know that I have any HTTP traffic in here, but I just applied an HTTP filter, and there's nothing in here because I haven't browsed any web pages. But in any case, it would show you some HTTP-specific data. But you could change this. If you wanted to create an SMB column setup, you could do that as well. However you want to customize it, we'll save it. Finally, the other feature we kind of added here is you can now right-click and remove a column. Before, you had to go into the column chooser. So it makes that operation a lot quicker and a little bit easier to do. So any questions so far? I'm kind of whizzing through this. All right, so some of the other features we added here was the layout feature I just talked about. So layouts, you can see by default, my layout is a little bit different than what you're used to if you've seen it, but this one's the same, but there's three others. So we have a diagnostic layout. This gives you a little bit more width going this way, puts a conversation tree down here. Again, you can customize this however you want. And then there's also the developer layout. So there's some different layouts you can choose based on the way you work. And again, you can customize them. Parser profiles, I'll talk about in a second, but basically you can select against different profiles to either get more parsing speed or more parsing resolution, more granularity in your parsing. And then finally, we have This has always been in the package, but now it's accessible here, and this allows you to access the parser profiles that I'm going to talk about in a second, if you want to create your own profiles or do any work in that regard. We've also, so as I mentioned here, auto scroll, you can turn it on to see the most recent traffic right now rather than seeing just the old data. So it just scrolls, basically keeps up with the incoming traffic. I think that's all. Oh, and then the experts menu. This is now shows up in the live capture, like I said. So if I run, for instance, my TCPA analyzer, I can run it, and all it does is it says, "Hey, I want you to." It's going to ask me. Does it appear on a different screen? It'll save the file and then run the expert on that save file. So it takes a snapshot of the trace as it is right now to run the expert, because the expert has to read the trace, and so it can't be doing that live at the same time we're capturing. But it can take a snapshot and run the expert on that snapshot. All right, so I think that's all. Let me go check, see if I missed anything. We'll move on, and we'll probably show some of these things again. So let's talk about the parser profiles in a little bit more detail. So basically what has happened in our parsing engine is that the more parsing granularity, the more parsers we can parse, slower things go. It's basically the way our engine is working today. And so what happens is that, or what has happened is now we've created different parser profiles so that you can use a fast parser profile, the default or fast, to kind of dig into your trace and move around, filter, and find out where you want to go. And then once you get to the place where you want to get more resolution, you can switch to a higher resolution profile, like the full Windows profile, which basically parses everything, and see the data at the higher resolution. So this allows your filtering speed to be a little bit quicker by using the default and then switching to the higher one once you kind of narrow down what you want to see. So if you have a huge trace and you want to pull out some higher RPC traffic, you could basically narrow it down, look at, you know, maybe IP address, save it out, reload it, and then maybe then look at the high resolution. Or you can switch right in the middle if you want to. So this provides a little bit more flexibility. The other thing we did is, it used to be when you picked a new profile, it would build the parsers, and this would take 2 to 3 minutes. We've now saved each of these compiled versions of these profiles and any ones you create so that when you switch between them, it's a lot quicker. We also do this on install. So the install takes a little bit longer, but now when you load Network Monitor, there's no building of the parsers. It just pops up and brings up the already compiled binary that we have created during the install. Any questions on parser profiles? Now again, you can create your own profiles if you have like a certain set that you look at all the time. It's not necessarily a straightforward thing, but in some cases it is. It just depends on the dependencies between the different parsers. All right, so now we're talking about the UI a lot, but Network Monitor is not only a GUI tool. There's actually another tool called NMCAP, and if you use Wireshark, I think there's, I can't remember the tool, something Trace or something. There's a Wireshark version, but basically it's a command line tool that provides some other features that the UI does not. First thing is it's scriptable, so you can put it in batch files. You can set it to start and stop in certain when a filter is hit or when a certain amount of time has passed. The filtering is just like the UI. There's no different filtering, so you type in a string just like the UI. You don't have to learn a new filtering language or anything. You can also capture live or from a file. So if you want to do some post-processing on capture files, like for instance, you got a big capture file or set of capture files and you want to pull out all the HTTP data or a port 80 traffic, you can specify a capture file as input. The one thing that NMCAP has that the UI doesn't is allow you to create chain capture files. Actually, it's not exactly this bullet item, but you can do chain capture files and circular capture files. The UI just captures forever. So we get this problem every once in a while mentioned where people start a capture, let it run for days and days, and now they can't do anything in the UI or they can't save the capture. And so the reason is the UI doesn't do any circular capture. It's got to display all the data, so we got to remember it. We decided not to dump off like old frames. So it doesn't have an option to do stuff like a circular capture or a chain capture, but NMCAP does. And NMCAP is our high performance tool. UI is not high performance. If you're capturing on a busy server, UI is going to eat up memory. It's basically not the right tool to use for long-term captures. NMCAP is. NMCAP you can run for months without using up, you know, more than, I don't know, it won't use up all your memory in certain conditions, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So there's also this Ritz start and stop features. Like I said, you can start and stop on a filter. And it's automatically in the past, so if you're on a command line, you just type NMCAP, and it shows up there. So really quick, I'm going to just show you. So if you run NMCAP, ask for usage. So like any command line tool, there's a bazillion parameters that you can do, and not really user-friendly. We understand that as a command line tool, it kind of, you know, you have to read through it. But what we have done is there's examples. So you do slash examples, and it shows you about, you know, 8, 9 different examples how to use NMCAP. So this is a little bit more helpful. For instance, you know, if we look at the top one there, you can see I'll just point. So for instance, example one, we capture on all networks, doing a TCP filter, saving to a file. So pretty simple example. This example, you can see that the filter is a little bit longer. And just to look at a little bit more complex, you can see we can start when at a certain time, and then stop when after 10 minutes. So there's different parameters for doing different things as far as capturing. Any questions on NMCAP? No? So let's look at a little chart for the differences between NMCAP and the UI, just to kind of solidify what the differences really are. So process tracking. Before 3.4, you could only do process tracking in the UI, but now in 3.4 with NMCAP, we have a new feature to turn on process tracking. We haven't talked about process tracking much yet. We will in a second. But basically, it allows you to see the traffic by the process that sent it. So if you're running IE, you can click on IE in the conversation tree and see all the traffic that IE has generated. So this is a new feature we've added at NMCAP, and I'll talk about the process tracking a little bit more in a second. High-perf filtering. This is a new feature we've added, which again I will talk about in detail in a second, but basically allows you to create high-performance filters to capture data on quick networks. So you've probably seen this problem with Wireshark as well, but you'll start a capture and you get drop frames because your server's got a 1 gig network and it's just basically pummeled with traffic. So we've tried to address this problem with this new high-performance filtering feature, which I'll talk about in a second. But both these are available in the UI and NMCAP, and it's new to 3.4. Wireless monitoring. So by default, you can capture wireless traffic with NMCAP, but one feature we have in the UI allows you to capture the wireless setup traffic. So you can put your wireless NIC, you can basically disconnect it from the network and put it in a scanning mode where it basically scans channels, you know, sit for 1 second on one channel and kind of scan through them, scanning the various channels. So this is available in the UI, but not NMCAP. So this is a cool feature. It's basically certain NICs have to support it, but I mean, for most part, Intel, there's a bunch of them that support this monitoring feature. So if you have a laptop, you can play around and try to figure out what other people do. It's encrypted, but it's kind of a cool feature. Low profile. So by this means, you can run it for a long time. So you NMCAP, you run forever. UI, don't really use it for that situation. If you're doing a long-term capture, please use NMCAP. Automatable, UI is not automatable, but NMCAP is. And then finally, flexible capture file format. This means that the UI can't do it, but NMCAP can do circular capture files and chain capture files. So that's what I mean by the flexible capture type or format. All right, so this is kind of the 101 of taking a capture. Yes? Yes, so the question is what are the input formats that you can use for NMCAP? So in general, we can open up PCAP files and then the native network monitor capture files. So those are the two that we can support as input for NMCAP as well. Now TCP dump, I think, outputs PCAP format. So as long as you keep it in that format, those are the two that we can read in. And actually, ETL is the other one, the Windows-specific ETL logging file format. Any other questions? All right, so back to the things to consider when capturing. And so this is the idea that, you know, you're going to capture a trace. How do I know I'm getting the data I really need? So the first one is the traffic has to arrive at the capturing machine. Maybe obvious, but in some cases, if you have three machines and you're in the middle trying to capture the traffic between the two machines, your machine might never see that traffic. Today we have smart switches, smart routers that block that traffic. You might never see it. So keep that in mind, that somehow the traffic has got to get to that machine. And in some cases, that means configuring the router to mirror a port or whatever that router has available to it. Now, there's also something called promiscuous mode. And so in the properties of each NIC, you can turn on promiscuous mode. This means there's some traffic that your NIC will go by but won't be necessarily listening to. And promiscuous mode says, all right, just show me all the traffic. If it's going to make it to my machine, go ahead and capture that traffic. So if you're on a hub, which usually are pretty dumb hubs, they don't do any filtering, and you have two machines that are communicating, and you're the third machine, and you're in promiscuous mode, you'll be able to see that traffic. So often you need this feature to see, to be a promiscuous viewer in a capturing situation. So there's also something called capture filtering, which, so I mentioned this before, and you all knew what it was, but there can be an issue putting too much capture filtering. So this means that you type in a filter HTTP and start up a capture filter. Well, you got to be careful, because when in network monitor anyways, HTTP means only captured data that's been parsed as HTTP. That means all the TCP fragments, we're not going to capture them. So the simple advice here is don't do any capture filtering if you can avoid it. And if you have to do it, try to keep it to the port level. TCP port, UDP port, that'll usually be pretty safe. Now, there might be cases when you need to see ARP traffic, and, you know, for instance, if it's using that to keep something alive or determining whether or not a NIC is available, you might miss that traffic as well. So when in doubt, don't do any capture filtering. It's a little bit dangerous, especially if you're looking for a problem that you're not sure what the issue is. Monitor drop frames. So drop frames is something that we've added recently, and in 3.4 we've actually improved the ability to capture drop frames. There were some situations that we didn't necessarily report all the drop frames. So both the UI and NMCAP show you the drop frames, and if there are drop frames, there are certain things you can do about it, the high-performance filter being one of them that we'll talk about in a second. Frames are buffered, so we can't keep up with parsing abilities, you know, tons of frames a second, especially if you're on a 1 gig network. You know, your CPU has to go ahead and parse all the frames, and then depending upon how deep you are with a filter, there's no way to keep up. So they have to be buffered. And this is no different. Wireshark does the same thing. We buffer them to disk. So what can happen is that you could start a filter, start a capture with a capture filter, and what you'll see is there's this count in the UI and in NMCAP called pending frames. That means how many frames have gone to the disk before we've had a chance to filter them. So now you can see that you might be in a situation where you've got a complex enough filter where it's basically buffering everything to disk. It doesn't have a chance. It can't keep up, basically. So your disk will continually get filled up, especially on faster networks. And we do have a quota. We have like a 2% of your disk, so we'll stop once we reach 2%. But you can have that situation where you just keep on filling up your disk. So what I usually recommend is look at it for a couple minutes and make sure that the pending count is just not, like, you know, basically going up crazy over time. If it is, then you got to make a decision on how to fix that. Question? Yes. So the question is can you configure the quota? And there are, especially in both, well, NMCAP and the UI, there's two different ways to do the quota. There's a percentage, which you can change. There's also a minimum disk space, which you can use instead. So if you want to, you know, if you have a 2 terabyte drive, 2% is actually a pretty large, you know, number. So maybe it makes more sense to use a fixed value at that, at the instant. Yes?
Hello.
So the question is what about a 10 gig network? And so obviously it's even worse on a 10 gig than a 1 gig network. The whole issue there, as you mentioned, if the disk is slow. So can the disk keep up? If the disk can't keep up and we're running directly to disk, then you're going to drop frames. And this should be indicated in the drop frame counter. So the high performance filtering that I'm going to talk about in a sec might address that problem. But there are probably always going to be instances where you drop frames, especially if you want to. I mean, it just depends on how much data you get and how quick it's going in and how slow your disk is and how fast your CPU is. So all those things kind of mix into this problem, and it's pretty complex. It's not an easy problem to solve, but we're trying to give you some tools and also some documentation that will help you define how to configure this feature and do this capturing. In what? Oh, in command line utility? Yeah, so are you asking whether or not the command line utility has this option as well as the UI? Yeah, so the question is with command line, and this actually applies to the UI as well, can you configure the amount of memory before you write to disk, I suppose. So we write to disk. We don't keep anything in memory. We don't have, it's a memory mapped file is what it really is. So it really depends on the operating system. If we write to this memory mapped file and there's memory available, then actually it will be in RAM, but it's, you know, like a page file kind of. It's a memory mapped file. So in the end, it will end up in disk, and it just depends on the operating system load and how much memory it has available and how much it's going to flush out the disk in the end. But that's the one that's configurable by the disk quota, and it's basically fairly big, depending on how much disk space you have. And so on a 10 gig network, as long as we can keep up and the disk can keep up, then we'll write it to disk up to the maximum quota. But again, the key here is to just look at the counters, and you'll be able to tell if you can keep up. The pending count goes up, and you're probably going to get into a situation where the disk is going to get filled up sooner or later. And if you see the drop count go up, then you'll have to think about another strategy, and we have some ideas or some features there that will help with that. And this is this new high-perf capture filtering, which I'm going to talk about in detail in just hopefully a little bit. Yes? So the question is there a way to only capture the last 10 minutes of traffic? No, there isn't. And that's a good feature. What we do is we have a circular capture file, so you can capture the last 10 megs of data. So you could figure it out, but there is no last 10 minutes. And this has actually been a feature that people have asked for. So we have an API as well. It probably would be possible to write an API, a program to do this, but you still have to buffer them to disk first anyways, or you'll end up dropping them before you can make the decision whether or not to save them. So maybe there are some other workarounds here, but not by default. All right, so now let's talk about this high-performance capture filtering in more detail. So here's the previous behavior in 3.3. We basically had our frames come in, and we have something called a root capture file, which is the buffer that I'm talking about, which is this memory map file. And then after it goes in the buffer, we parse and filter the frames and then move them to the capture file, whatever the end capture file is in this case. So as we parse and filter it, we're slow. This is, unfortunately, the time it takes to parse and filter things is a lot slower than sometimes the data coming in. I mean, it depends on your network, but in a 1 gig network, this is generally a slower part of the process, so therefore the frames back up. And we get in a situation where we just cannot keep up over time. We fill up the disk quota, and we drop frames. So we were trying to figure out at least some strategies for helping with this particular problem. So now we do this something called high-performance capturing. And what we've done is we've created a high-performance parsing set. And you actually saw that on the chart before. This is basically a dumbed-down parser set that has minimal things, like it goes up to TCP, basically. This allows us, our parsing engine, to be a lot quicker. And so what we do is we attempt to parse them using this optimized parser before we write them to the root chain capture file. Now, there's still instances where we still can't keep up, and it's dependent upon your environment, CPU speed, CPU load, disk speed, all these things. But what you will notice, or what we will do for you automatically, is if we detect we can't keep up, you provide some filter that is just too expensive to do before we write them to chain file, we actually detect that, and we have some flow control parameters that say, okay, let's turn it off, and now we're going to write to the root chain capture file. And then if we catch up and we have enough buffers in our disk space to catch up, then we actually move back into the high performance mode. So in the best world, we do all our parsing before it goes to the root chain capture. And so the typical or the scenario we're targeting here is you have a server that has 1 gig network and it's a lot of data, but you want a narrow slice of that network. You want one IP address or one port, one Ethernet address, and maybe even more narrow than that. You know, a pair of IP addresses, for instance. So as long as we can keep up with that higher speed parsing, two things happen. One is we don't write to the root chain capture file, so we put less load on the disk. We never have to write to the disk because we can discard them before it even gets to that part. And then the other thing that happens, as long as we can keep up, is that we basically end up with, I mean, I guess it's part of the same thing, but we basically end up with just writing the information to the disk once. Now, there's limits here. We can't parse into SMB. There's certain things that are really expensive. So rather than allow you to parse anything, we've narrowed it down to just a couple of fields. And basically, it's these ones listed here. Now, what this dialog is from our UI, we have things called standard filters. And standard filters are just basically a bunch of pre-canned filters that we provided to you. So we've also provided the high performance capture filters to show you which ones are valid and how to use them. The other thing is these fields are fully qualified. So if you fully qualify a field, that makes it a candidate for high performance filtering. So for instance, in this case, I put the fully qualified path TCP port. So you'll notice that this actually says, okay, IPv6, I'm not going to capture that. I'm not going to look at that. And the reason this is that this more uniquely identifies a specific offset. So there's not two decisions here. You don't have to say, is it IPv6? That's one less decision that has to be made. Therefore, that makes it higher performance. So basically, the limitations here, we can do Ethernet address, IPv4, IPv6, TCP port. In this case, you can do multiple of these things together if you want. UDP port, and then a Wi-Fi address. So this is basically the fields that you can filter on. You can do multiple of them together. And what we do is we detect when you type in your filter, if it contains all of these high performance filters that are available, then we'll try to plumb it down to the high performance filter mode. Does that make sense so far? Any questions? Now, of course, what we found in some of our machines when we tested this, that TCP port filter is still too expensive. It just depends on your CPU and your load. So you might try to do a TCP port, and then the flow control will kick in, and you'll see the pending count still grow. And this is a sign that your CPU is just too slow. Can't keep up with 1 gig or whatever your network traffic is. And so we plan to have some documentation around this in the short future, either in the blog or in the actual released help file, that kind of details when to use it, how to use it, because it is pretty complex. There's also registry entries for controlling the flow control, for controlling the number of buffers in the adapter, because that's how we capture frames to begin with. We pass down a bunch of buffers, they get filled in, we process those buffers in memory, and that's a limited, we're pretty sure it's non-page pool, so you can't make that huge. You can't go infinite on that particular buffer, so you're limited there. All right, any questions? Yes? Okay, so for the high performance filter, actually we're going to talk about reassembly in a little bit, but for all our capturing and capture filter, most of it is done before fragmentation or reassembly is done. There is a parameter or an option on NMCAP to say /reassemble capture, which means it'll reassemble it before it applies the filter. But this is a very expensive operation, actually, to do the filter. So if you're going to do a capture filter on something that needs to be reassembled, that's probably not going to work. I wouldn't recommend that. But we do support reassembly, which I'll show you how that works later on. Any other questions? All right, so now this is just about using the tool, how to filter frames. If you use Wireshark, a lot of this should be very familiar. But basically, we want to talk about the frame details, filters. We're going to talk about the conversation trees. Aliasing is what this friendly names is. It's kind of a useful feature for making it easier to read traces. Reassembly, as you just mentioned. Annotating captures is one of the key takeaways. And then finding protocol documentation references based on the data in a capture. So this is basically a slide that tells you all the things you can do, but I'm just going to show you, if I can remember all these. The first couple I talked about already. So let's just take a trace. So as I said, when you click on a frame, it shows the frame details. When you click on the frame details, it highlights where it is in the hex details. And I really wish I had... Okay, so let's actually show. So this is the double click in the data. So if I see something here, let's go look at a SMB frame. And so I see this text. I want to see where this comes from. Double clicking the hex details shows where the data is. And it actually just shows as part of the payload. And I'm not sure why that is. But I'll ignore that for now. So some of the other features are that if you have a packet that isn't decoded properly, we have a decode as button. So you can highlight the data you want in the hex details. You can hit decode as. And that will show you the list of available protocols and structures so you can decode them as whatever you want. Now, the question always comes up, so I'll hit this one before it's asked. People ask, how do I decode a stream of packets as a particular protocol? So for instance, if I see that HTTP is going over port 8080 or whatever it is, and I see a stream of data, how do I decode the whole thing as HTTP? So it's not as easy as it should be. It's not a feature that we'd be able to add yet, but it can be done. So the way our parsers work is that the data itself, or the parsing itself, is in these parsers, like I mentioned. And you can modify the parser. So what you would actually do is edit the parser and say, all right, HTTP traffic happens on port 8080. You rebuild the parser, and then you see the new traffic. So it's not as simple a process, but I can show you how to do it real quick. So actually, I'm going to show you two things at the same time. So TCP is what I want to modify. So we have this other feature that you can right-click a field, and you can say go to data field definition or data field type. So this actually jumps to the code where that stuff is defined. So at least it's an easy way to kind of get to any element, for that matter. And so this is the TCP protocol, and there's a bunch of code. And then we have this huge struct statement, huge switch statement, as you might expect, where it says... That's not it. Those are the options. So we have a switch statement that says, okay, if it's port 21, call FTP. So all you really have to do is add a new port in here.
So I could say case, I don't know. I could save this file. In fact, I'll show you this.
So when I try to save, it says access denied because the location where the parsers are protected. We don't want you really mucking with the old parsers. So it actually gives you this error message. It says you want to save to a new location. I'll say yes. It automatically picks my parser, my local parser directory, which is a good place to put it. I'll type in the name. Another bug where it should have put the name in there for us automatically, but we didn't get a chance to fix that. I'll save it. So that's the first step. I've saved the change. And now I have to rebuild the parsers. But this directory I've included is not in this parser profile. The parser profile does not include your local directory by default. So I can create a new parser profile. So what I can do is I can say, all right, I'm using the default. I want to create a new parser profile based on that profile. And what it does is it automatically adds, once you create a new profile, it automatically adds that directory. So you don't have to add it manually unless you put it in another location. So we made it kind of simple. At least we kind of shortcut some of the steps you'd have to do. And now I have this copy of the default, which I could have renamed. I can set it as active, and now it builds that parser set. And once it's built, it doesn't have to build it again. It'll show up in my parser profiles so that I can select it easily. Now that I realize I started this, I probably should have done this at a different time. But okay, well, the two other things I wanted to show you, I'll just remember to show you at a different time here while that's going in the background. But basically, I'm going to show you the cutting and pasting of the data so you can send, rather than a screenshot, you can send the actual data, which makes this a lot easier. Oh, did it get done? Yeah, it did get done. So now when I go to parser profiles, I see that I have a new one there that I'm able to select and switch between that one and the regular one. So I actually go back to the default one because I know that that's a lot quicker. But now if I had traffic on port 888, it would be parsed as FTP. So hopefully that's not something you have to do all the time, but there is a way to do it. And I have a blog on this as well. If you can't remember how to do this, there's an older blog, but it tells you how to update the parser file. Okay, so like I was saying, if you want to... So the situation is you've got this trace, and you're talking to your buddy, and you're saying, hey, I've got this trace, and here's some information... And you pass it an email, and you don't want to pass the whole trace because maybe it's huge, but you just want to show the user some of the data. So in Network Monitor, you can select a bunch of frames, and it doesn't have to be in order either. You can right-click and say copy, and that copies the text to the clipboard. So now I can go, and I will use, you know what I'll do, actually, I'll use WinWord. The only reason I use this is because my mail has this exact same feature, Outlook. And I could also do Excel. So this information is tab separated. So in Excel, if you paste it into Excel, works perfect. All the columns line up. It does what you think it's supposed to do. In Word or Outlook, for instance, if you say insert table, it actually tabulates it properly too. So now you can take this table, cut out columns you don't want, and just show the information. So it gives it kind of a really easy way to work with this data, but it's text. You can also paste it in as raw text as well. So that works in the frame summary, but it also works in the frame details. So if you have a specific frame you want to show, you basically open up all the fields that you want to send to the user, because basically it does a snapshot of what's available in the frame details. Say copy tree, and this time I'll just go into Notepad. And so it copies that text. And I find this more useful than a picture because invariably what happens is the picture is cutting off the piece I want to see. You know, I see TCP port equal, and then it's gone. And I'm like, okay, well, if I only had the text, I could have scrolled over there and find it. Capture file is probably the best thing, but this is actually a really good, quick way to show something specific. You could highlight it or whatever. Hex details, pretty much the same. The formatting's doesn't look exactly like this. It actually puts the hex first and the data second. And so sometimes that's useful because you can cut and paste from the data directly. Sometimes it's not because people want to see this format. But we did it one way, not both. And also the conversation tree, you could actually do the same thing, copy and paste. So that gives an easy way to pass details to other people. Any questions on that? Pretty straightforward. Hope I never get another picture of a trace again. All right, so now let's talk about how to use filtering, which is obviously probably one of the more important things of any tool, any protocol analyzer. So the first thing is the filtering is the same. We don't have different filtering. Capture filtering is the same as display filter, NMCAP color. And we have this feature, find next previous, which basically allows you to type a filter to find the next frame that matches. All the same filtering. Standard filters. So this is what I talked about to get to the high performance filtering, but we have a bunch of other ones there. So for instance, if you want to know how to do SMB filters, there's a bunch there. And so what I'm going to show you real quick is one of the other key takeaways. So under load filter, standard filters, there's something called parser errors. And I'll open this up a little bit. This is all the filter is. It looks for a structure called parser error. So what we do in our parsers is that if we detect something's not parsed properly, like there's extra data at the end of a frame, for instance, or we're expecting some piece of data and it's not proper, you can apply a filter error filter. Whoops. And it'll basically locate all the frames that match that filter. So if there was anything that did not meet the documentation spec that was identified in the parsers, it would show up here. So this is a pretty easy way to say, all right, you know, I've traced some traffic from my box. Let's see if anything obvious shows up in the trace that isn't parsed properly by our parsers. And assuming that we've kept up with the documentation, that might mean there's an issue. Now, it doesn't mean that it finds all issues, but it just finds some of the general ones like unparsed data at the end of a frame or just some weird structure issue that doesn't match what the documentation is. Of course, I don't have any here. Any questions on that? All right, another general filter is IntelliSense. So IntelliSense, you might have seen in some of our other products, but we have it as well in Network Monitor. So when you're building a filter, if you start with dot, it shows the upper level information. So I can say protocol. Dot shows me all the list of protocols, TCP, dot, and now I see the port. So it's a simple way to, one of the simple ways to find where this data is. And if you start with dot, it shows you the top level information. But you don't always have to start with dot. If you know what you're looking for and you type TCP dot, it still shows you IntelliSense. So you don't have to start with dot. It just kind of gives you the high-level items if you don't know where to start at all. Then also in the help file, we have some filtering help. So that's another place you can go. All right, so the first one I already went over. Start with dot. If you don't know what you're looking for, start with dot. And you can kind of use IntelliSense to drill down. But an even better way to find this is if you're on a frame already and you need to find data that matches this frame or you need to figure out how to create a filter with the element you're focusing in on, you can right-click Add to Filter. So, for instance, let me remove my filter. And if I'm in a TCP frame, and I want to know how to create a filter based on the flags, I can right-click, add selected data, and it ORs in the filter, because I had this other thing here, based on the value that you typed in. So by right-clicking, you can create a filter to find all the other frames where the acknowledgement is set. And then it also sort of tells you how to create any flags filter for the most part. In fact, I could back up over ACK and do the dot for IntelliSense and see the other other flags that allow you to select. So that's a very simple way to create a filter. In fact, that's probably the easiest way because you usually have data you're looking at. So this applies in other places as well, though. So not only in the frame details, but in the frame summary, I can click on a column. So our columns are properties, as I mentioned before, and properties is just metadata that is that the parser writer creates when they're writing the parser. So for instance, the source and destination fields is metadata that we supply, and depending upon what kind of frame you're looking at, if it's Ethernet, IPv4, IPv6, we show the address as a string for that particular frame. So for instance, if I do add source to display filter, it says, all right, source is the name of the field, set it equal to this string, because it's represented as a string once it reaches the frame summary. And so you can do this with any field. And in fact, now some fields, like time is a little weird, so if you're trying to do something with time, I probably should write a blog on that, but there is some forum, a forum question that talks about filtering on time, which is a little bit strange, but it works in some cases. I mean, it works, but
The difference is it's not a time format. So when you create it as a filter, it's this long number, which is the 64-bit number that represents the time. So sometimes it's hard to do that conversion. But as I said, you can do it for other columns. You can do it for description as well. And so one of the new features we added for 3.4 is to be able, so we can create a display filter, but now we can also create color filters by right-clicking. So this makes this feature a little bit easier to use and makes things accessible. So let's say I wanted to color filter, the color rule we call them. It'll automatically bring up the color rule dialog, and now I can set these things to a nice green color. And now those frames will be colorized for me. So another simple way to reach the color filtering with the right click. And then finally, I mentioned this a second ago, but you can Control F. Well, that's fine. So this is like Find in Excel and we're in all the other products you've probably ever used in your life. So instead of filtering out on the frame, it jumps to the next frame that matches this filter. So this is just another way to get around in the trace via a filter. Does that make sense? Does everyone see what I'm talking about there? It's not it doesn't filter out anything, but it just basically finds the next matching frame, which I'm doubting there's any in there. I don't know why the screen keeps flaking out, but so here's some more filtering examples. So usually to filter on the protocol, you just have to do the protocol name. You have to know what it is. If you don't know what it is, dot protocol, dot, we'll show you the list and you can select one. Or, and, but you can also use the double bars and the double ampersands if you're a coder. Both those work. Double equals to do equals. So there's a TCP port. So port is, obviously a, it's a property, and it's a special kind of property called the pair, so it looks for the source and destination like you expect it to. But there is no port, obviously, in TCP. It's source port and destination port, right? So filter on properties. So you're able to take any property, and again, they're metadata that's defined by the protocol, the parser writer. And so you can say property.protocol equal LDAP. Protocol is one of the properties, the metadata that we supply. Conversation.process name, so process tracking I haven't talked about yet, but basically if you have process tracking, you can look for frames that from a specific process by using that filter. Color filters, so some example, you could say show all TCP retransmits in orange, find documentation anomalies, so this is the one I talked about. You can actually color code those so they all show up in red if anything pops up. And now let's talk about these contains. I guess they're plugins is what we call them. But basically, they're like a text search. So in this case, I'm looking for Microsoft in the URI of an HTTP request. So you say dot contains and the thing you want to search for in that data field. We also have something called contains bin, which stands for binary. So this allows you to search for any data, and it's specifically meant for frame data. You can use it in some other cases, but say you want to search, you got this big trace, and you just know that the text in there somewhere, a phone number or a social security number, like in this case, is somewhere in a frame. Well, you can use this to search for it, to do a filter for it. So contains bin, frame data, which stands for the entire frame, ASCII, because you could search for ASCII, Unicode, you can search for hex data as well. And then the hex you want to, in this case, ASCII you want to look for. So let's do another example real quick to drive this home. In fact, let's do this. So if you even forget what that is, we have a standard filter called search frame. And it actually explains what all these values are and what's available to you and shows you a few different examples. So the one I wanted to do is a hex example one. So I just copy that. And I'll comment this one out. So now I'm looking for
frame data, hex is just another property, but basically tells to search for hex, and then the hex data that I'm searching for. So that gives you an easy way to search through just the entire trace for anything that matches that. Obviously, if you don't know what you're even starting with and you just know some text there, this is the easiest way to find it. Everyone understand that? Question? So that's an awesome question. So he's asking, is that a way you can find an SMB header within a TCP frame? So sometimes when you're doing SMB traffic, we do this thing where we break up the SMB traffic that isn't on a frame boundary. So somewhere buried in the frame is an SMB packet that doesn't get parsed because network monitor can't deal with some of these things. So you could actually create a filter, and I doubt I have it on this machine because I've reinstalled recently. But I actually create a color filter to find these things. And I have a, so for instance, let's see. Let me try to do this real quick. So for instance, you could look for the tag SMB. So I see that's 42. Actually, I could include the FF if I want to do SMB1. So I pasted that. Contains bin. So I'll call the frame. I'll do hex. I'll paste this in. So this is one case where that hex does work well. So now I can find the frames that match that. So what I can also do is I can say, okay, well, show me all the frames that contain that data that don't get parsed as SMB. And this will locate all those embedded frames in TCP that don't get properly parsed by network monitor. And there are cases where that happens because we can't detect the boundaries within a frame. So I actually have this as a color filter on my main machine because I run into this a lot. And I want to see those frames. It'll show up as TCP. It'll get colored the way I want it colored. And I'll dig in the TCP frame and say, oh, there's an SMB frame. Decode as, I'll select it, decode as, and then I'll parse it as an SMB frame to see what it is. So that's an excellent point. Any other questions? Yes. You would, so the question is how would you decode as that frame? So what you do is you'd select from SMB down in the details. In fact, I guess I could do it on that frame. Let's go back to this. By the way, I'm hitting Control Enter to apply the frame. Wireshark users like Enter, but that gets us to the next line. But basically, you would just highlight this data. It's already highlighted for me. And decode as protocol SMB. And then what it does is it opens up a new window that you can look at for that data. Now, there are some limitations because there is state information sometimes in an SMB frame, and so it doesn't always parse completely, but at least it gives you some idea of what it is. Any other questions? All right, let's start. Oh, yes. I'm sorry? You want the size of the size of the field. So you want to know, can you get the size of the field? So in the hex details, and I think it probably gets cut off on my small screen. In the hex details, if I select a field, like TCP payload, here in the dialog, so it sees the size, the offset, and the protocol offset. Okay? Yes? Okay, so the question is there an expert to show response times, for instance, for SMB or for any layer? We don't have any experts yet. It's actually... So we have our document team actually sent out a list of experts that we thought would be useful, and that was one of them. So I don't know exactly if this is something they'll be able to publish. You could certainly write one with the API. That's something that the API allows you to do. And so that is an option for you. But you know, maybe an expert will come out either out in the wild or from our internal teams. All right, so let's talk about conversations real quick. They're basically a logical grouping of frames, and it gives you a very visual way to zero in. And so here you can see Internet Explorer's at the top, shows you all the IPv4 conversations, and under that, the TCP conversations. So these are hierarchical. Basically, you know, you have the tree where a TCP conversation goes under IPv4. And when you click on these, it actually filters out those frames in the UI. So if I want to see all the Internet Explorer traffic, I can click on that. Or if I want to see this particular conversation, I can click on the TCP conversation. It provides state for a parser. So our parser keeps information in the conversation. For instance, if you're doing an SMB connection and there's a command without a response, as there sometimes is, the response doesn't have the command in it, we keep track of that in our conversation state. So you can turn off conversations if you want to get more memory or more performance, but then you lose the state information and some things don't parse properly. It's also defined by the parsers. So if you're writing a parser or you want to change the way the conversations work, you can define what the conversation is, which also means that it's not limited to connection-oriented protocols. You can do it for anything that has some key somewhere that defines that conversation. So when you select the conversation node, it filters on that conversation. You can right-click a frame and find the conversation. So this is very important because this is the follow the stream feature that everyone wonders where it is in Network Monitor, and it's there, I promise you. So for instance, if I'm on this SMB, I can do find conversations, and I could find the TCP conversation. I can also find IPv6 or the specific SMB conversation. So it's more than just follow the TCP stream, it's follow anything that has a conversation available to it. So when I select TCP, it jumps in the conversation tree, finds it, and highlights it. And by highlighting it, it shows you just the traffic for that TCP stream in this particular example. Does that make sense? I say you can scan children quickly for parsing traffic overview. So what I mean by that is that once I find this conversation, and in this case, there aren't other TCP conversations there. But for instance, if I was looking at IPv traffic at a high level, like at a machine, I can just down arrow and see what each pair of machines is doing. So I see this one's not doing much. This one's not doing anything. This has got a little bit going on. Nothing, nothing. All right, that's the guy that's doing most of the traffic. So it kind of gives you a real quick way to jump through the various conversations. You can also right-click and copy to a filter so you can get multiple conversations. So this just means that I can right-click and copy it to the conversation, to the clipboard, and I can paste it here, and I can do multiple ones. You can also do this manually if you know what the conversation ID is, which is listed in the conversation tree, usually next to the conversation ID 8, you can see. And those are just enumerated as we find conversations. And then I say virtual filter. One of the things people often ask for is, I've got this huge conversation tree. Can I filter in the conversation tree? Well, no. But you can virtually filter by finding all the frames you want, save them to a new file, and then open it up, and then the conversation tree will be limited to that whatever you saved. So it's kind of a way to work around that if you need to get that information. Aliases is a feature that's been in 3.3 and probably before that. We've had a right-click add to alias so that I can select. So basically, what is it? So you got this huge trace, and you want to be able to easily identify your IP addresses so you can give them friendly names. So rather than 1.2.5, whatever, you have these friendly names, which makes it much easier to deal with the trace. And so the new features we added is you can right-click and add an alias. Brings up the dialog. And then it automatically applies the alias. That's new to 3.4. You used to have to go in and manually apply them after the fact, but now it just automatically applies them. All right, so reassembly. Any questions on aliases? Kind of zooming through this because we're running out of time. So reassembly is the question that was brought up before. So we don't do reassembly by default automatically. So when you bring up a trace, it's not reassembled. There's a button there that you can press to reassemble the data. Multiple protocols can fragment the data. You know, TCP, HTTP, everybody does their own fragmentation. They're not automatically reassembled, and it's only available in a saved trace. So if you add a new trace, you have to save it first before you even see the button. Once you do the reassembly, it opens up a new window. So this new window has all the original data, but we insert frames where fragments have been. So we reinsert all the TCP fragments, and then we put all those fragments together if it's HTTP, and we insert new frames for that. Makes it a little bit confusing sometimes to find the data because you often see duplications where you see the original header and then the reassembled header at TCP and then you see the reassembled header again at HTTP. But one trick here is that each of these inserted frames have a payload header, which means I can filter on them and I can create a color filter for them as well. So I have a blog on this. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but it is, in fact, here's the example. So the first indication is that if you see a bunch of continuation frames and it says continuation, then that says, hey, I've got to reassemble the trace. So that kind of tells you right away that if you want to look into that payload data, which you might not necessarily have to, if you want to look into it, you have to hit the reassembly button. And then when you do, new frames are inserted. I create this color filter where I underline anything that has payload header, so that I can easily identify all the payload headers. And it makes it easier to kind of pick out the ones that have been inserted versus the one up here that's the original. You can see that's sort of duplicated there. And then you can see that what we do is we insert this new frame, put a fake header on the top, and then put the HTTP data there at the bottom. Whoops. Does that make sense? Anybody have questions on that? All right, so here's another feature, frame commenting. So with frame comments, you can actually annotate the trace. You can bring up a trace, you can select a frame, and add some data that shows up in frame comments in the UI. So one use of this is that we have these system documents up on CodePlex. And these are documents that have been annotated. For instance, this is a find file in domain. So if I go to the frame comments, I can hit the next frame comment. And it goes to the first frame, frame 17, and then down here in this frame comment dialog, it tells you what it's doing. And it has a step from the document so you can follow along. So these sysdocs are kind of ways of documenting traces so that you can understand how the documents relate to the trace. And it uses this frame annotation feature to show what's going on. And you can use this yourself. You can annotate it. This is actually... it's enabled for RTF, so if you cut and paste from a RTF-enabled app, it keeps all that formatting. You can't do any formatting inside, but you can colorize it and write or Word or whatever and copy it in there, and it'll keep it. That's actually what you have to do. You have to save it to a new file. You can't overwrite the original file. Once you save it, that's right, it's not a PCAP file. Once you save it, it's going to be a capture file. PCAP doesn't support this type of frame annotation. So we didn't have a way to save it in that format. In fact, we can't save in PCAP format anytime. And then you can also filter on it if you want to create a filter that shows which frames have a comment. You can also add this as a column. The title is a column in your trace if you want to see those comments show up in the trace in the frame summary. So another couple of more features. We added UTC timestamps, which is the ability to kind of create some time zone information. Today, when you do a trace in Network Monitor, it timestamps it with the local time. So now we have this UTC timestamp, and I have a slide on that. I'm not sure we'll get to it. High precision timestamps. Used to be with 3.3, do a capture, you get a lot of timestamps at the same time. We now have a higher resolution, so you get a more granular timestamp in 3.4 when you take a trace with 3.4. This is the time zone example, but basically the idea is that if you have other like event viewer traces to associate with a trace, That also keeps track of UTC time, so it gets kind of confusing. You're looking at an event viewer trace that's been normalized to your time zone. Well, now Network Monitor does it as well. But there is a feature to go back. You can select the columns, like a show with the column feature, to show the old format if that's the way you wish to see it. The parsers, I'm not going to really say much about the parsers. I already mentioned they're updated on CodePlex monthly, but you can edit them. All the source code is shipped. There are now Office parsers out there. That was a question that came up last PlugFest on the Download Center. So for the Office tools, you can get parsers for those as well. They add in as another profile set. It's also a way you can locate the documentation. It allows you, in the top of each parser file, we have the documentation that references it, ms-smb. So if you're in a parser, in a trace, and you don't know where the documentation is, you can go to definition, go to the top of the file, and you'll see the references that were used to create that parser. So that's another way you can kind of locate the data. This is the parser's tab. It's all built in the product. The editor is okay. You might want to edit it with something else, but it does allow you to edit and change things like you saw me do before. This is also where you build. You might get build errors, and there's a tree on the side that lets you explore the objects. Double-click it, or bring up the code that goes with that object. And so really quick, I want to talk about the API. It's something we include with the product, DLL that we ship, not redistributable, so if someone needs to use your expert or a program that uses, they have to download Network Monitor 2 as well. But in the documentation, there's help files, there are examples. We have some examples on CodePlex, which are open source, which you can modify or look at to see how to use the API. What you can do with the API is you can capture traffic. And when we started, it was a capturing traffic, filter, and read data fields. We then allow you to read properties and comments. You can get display descriptions, so the way we format it, you can get those as well. You can access conversation information. And then finally, in 3.4, we added something called pattern offset driver filtering. So this is kind of similar to the high performance filtering, except that it's done in the driver. So we've had some groups start using this internally, and for specific situations where they want to do high performance capturing on specific patterns, this gives way better performance. And this is probably the best performance overall, but it's only available in the API. And then finally, we have added support for the parser profiles. And then finally, the question about the experts. It's available from the UI. So the one thing we added in 3.4 is on a new trace, I can now get to the expert menu. And then if I went to download experts, it would send me to this page. Now, the reason I don't do it internally is because internally we have a different page for internal users. But when you do it, it takes you to this page. It basically shows you the list of available experts. So you can see we have a decryption expert. So if you have SSL traffic and the private key, you can decrypt that traffic with Network Monitor. So that's probably a useful tool for people dealing with SSL type traffic. We have a simple search expert. Allows you to kind of do the same thing as searching the frame details, but with using the better search tool. I can't remember what it's called. Michael, what's the? But it's also got the crazy language, regex. Yeah, the regular expression search. So you can do more fancy searches that way. Top users, so you list the top users in a trace by address pairs or by single users. So if you want to find the chattiest talker on your network, and that expert's used for that. TCP Analyzer is an interesting tool that was created by our research folks to allow you to analyze TCP traffic and graph it. So you can see, by looking at a picture, whether or not you're getting good performance or whether you're bandwidth limited, if you're congested, by looking at a picture. So it's a pretty cool tool. And as we get more experts, we'll post them up here, and you can get to it again by the menu in Network Monitor. So finally, go ahead and play with Network Monitor, install it, give us your feedback. Remember to visit CodePlex, the latest parsers. We put them out monthly, so you can just get the latest package, install them. They show up automatically in the product. And then think about experts in your domain. This is one thing we want. If you're out there and you've got this cool idea that other people might be able to benefit from, There might be an expert that you could create, load up on CodePlex, and then we can advertise it for you from that expert's menu page. And then finally, these are the links that you'll get in the slide. I guess that's it. Are there any other questions? No? All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time and appreciate it.